The Sam Cedar Show, where every day is casual Friday. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. We're not afraid of dungarees, America, on The Sam Cedar Show.
Good evening. Good evening. Good morning. Isn't it morning, Jim? Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. It's Mark Maron in for Cedar. Cedar is out for the day, moving, I think. He's running out of New York City to upstate, where he's just going to cloister up there. Is that a word, Jim Earl, who's here with me? Is that a word to cloister, is it?
It's a verb and a word, yeah.
So he's cloistering up there with his family, up there away from the horrendous, you know, hustle bustle of New York City. Actually, he was run out because he can no longer afford to live in New York City. Is that wrong of me to say behind his back? He's doing fine.
What, with all his residuals from that incredible...
From the first TV show?
The TV show that he did like 20 years ago?
From the show? I remember that show. But anyway, Sam Cedar, no, he's just, he is moving upstate today, and he did have me filling in for him, and I'm happy to be here. It's great to be on the air. I want to thank the Young Turks for letting us use their wonderful facility here in Los Angeles. Jim Earl?
Yeah, I'm here.
I love to drive at night. I love to drive in the middle of the night.
I know. Isn't that a Springsteen song or something?
Well, I'm going to write a song if it's not a Springsteen song. I just think it's so great because you really sort of, you can appreciate the city. It's quiet. You understand the zen of being, can I be a little bit patriotic right off the bat here?
Of
being American and in a car driving on a street unfettered with other traffic. I tell you, I am always amazed when I drive in Los Angeles almost at any time of day other than driving in the middle of the night. Just how anybody, and this is a topic I know that's close to your heart, how can anybody question the integrity or the reality of global warming? If you ever get stuck in traffic for more than 10 minutes and you realize at that moment when you're sitting there in a line of hundreds of cars not moving in the middle of the day for reasons that are unforeseen, and you realize this is never gonna end. It's never going to end. We are going to be stuck in traffic for the rest of time. There's no solution to this. They're not going to stop making more cars. There's no way that anything can seemingly be done other than to shift the entire energy paradigm. But the amazing thing to me is when you're sitting there, I understand the frustration. I understand the frustration of the postal worker that goes crazy and shoots people. I understand road rage because it's an existential moment of despair when you realize these letters are never going to stop. They're going to keep coming. These cars are going to keep coming. And for anybody who has ever been in a city for more than 5 minutes, doubts the integrity of global warming, which, by the way, is the only thing that conservative talk show hosts seem to have a hat to hang on these days, which is not even real. All they can do now is take pop shots because they've got no support anywhere. You listen to Glenn Beck. You listen to some of these guys. They're taking pot shots at the Penguin movie. That's the big criminal. The Penguin movie is a liberal global warming agenda indoctrinating kids. Good. They should learn not to throw garbage in the ocean or overeat. Am I right, Jim?
I haven't heard anything about the movie except the last 30 minutes. It's kind of like a commercial for ecology. Is that?
How horrible. Ecology?
Well, you know, it's like...
That's a travesty, Jim.
Have you read The Jungle? In Sinclair.
What a bunch of propaganda that was about the meatpacking industry at the turn of the century.
It was a great novel up until the last 30 pages. Then it was just this horrible, you know, propaganda. Maybe they're right. Am I on the right network? How can Cedar still have a job? That's my other question. What happened to this guy? I'm so disillusioned with Sam Cedar.
But I'm just fascinated in watching conservative talk radio. You know, conservative television and talk radio, I never listened to it before. Until the Democrats took both houses. I wouldn't listen to it. I know, like, Sam loves to listen to it to argue with those guys, but I have no patience for it. But it was very interesting to me. Now, you and I have not been on the radio since the tremendous, overwhelming electoral success.
The day before we were on the radio.
I think we're what did it. I think that our appearance on Jerry Springer's program the day before the election is what turned it for all of them. I think that's why we got more seats than we thought we were going to get.
Yeah.
But we haven't been on the radio, and right after the elections, I watched Fox News for really the first time in my life, I think, and it was tremendous because the only default that those guys had, that those news people or anchor people or ideologues or personalities or megalomaniacal idiots that they have on that network, the only default they had was to try to behave like journalists. Like they had been gutted of their ideological confidence, and so now they were behaving like journalists. It was hilarious. And now I listen to Rush Limbaugh a lot, because they have no cultural foundation anymore. They no longer have the support of the people that once were duped by their message, and they're floundering, and it's just beautiful to see. And I think I wish somebody would take Glenn Beck out. And I'm not saying kill him. I mean maybe punch him on the air. I wish it was somebody.
I thought you were talking about a date or something.
No, he's married and he's Mormon. Not that that has anything to do with anything. I don't know how many wives he has, but I'm not going to judge him.
He's Mormon.
He claims to be a Mormon recovery guy, but his message couldn't be more subtly hate mongering and fear mongering than anything I've ever seen. He presents himself as some sort of populist, and what's really under there is complete. These guys want, when you see them for what they are, when they don't have any cultural momentum as ideologues. What you see is that all they have is the power to divide. They have nothing invested in bringing people together at all. All they can do is point at things and say, that's why we hate them. I heard Ron Ziegler last night. He's a talk show personality out here. He's a right-wing talk show personality. Railing about Danny DeVito's appearance on The View. Literally, like, out of his mind that Danny DeVito would be drunk on The View talking about him and Rita Perlman, his wife, having sex in every room, having sex in every place they could in the Lincoln bedroom during Clinton's reign. Now, first of all, who wouldn't do that? Who would, like, if you're there with your wife at the White House, I don't care who's in office, of course you're going to have sex in the White House. And I think that's part of the, it don't matter what president you are or how religious you are, mm-hmm. or where you come from, I think that once you get into the White House, the first thing you're going to do is have sex everywhere possible, just to kind of make it your territory. I mean, look how many people have lived there over the last 200 years. You got to make it your own somehow. Can I set up the show a little bit? I feel like I've just rambled on about this or that. I got a lot of things that I want to talk about. We don't have a lot of time because I'm on the radio so rarely these days that I want to put together great shows. And I generally overbook them. But today we've got a great show. We're going to be talking to L.A. Times Baghdad Bureau Chief Borzu Dargahi, who is in India, to try to figure out what the hell is going on in Iraq, because I have never felt more. Every time I see George Bush on television, outside of the standard resentment and reviling wave that comes over me. Is reviling, that's the right word, right? Why, I can't get my words right.
Reviling.
Contempt and...
Sure, yeah. I think it works. Yeah.
Is that now he's completely incompetent and is doing everything he can to save what little bit of his ass he has left. And I've been feeling a very ominous, horrible thing, more so than ever, about Iraq. So I want to talk to Borzu. We've got Lawton Smalls coming up moments from now. Rolling Stone columnist Matt Taibbi is going to try and, you know, tell us about this Russian spy assassination that I know nothing about. Aris Barr is going to be here. She was on the old Marc Maron show about her off-Broadway show, her hit show, Die. Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph, Army Lieutenant, is going to tell us about why he feels the Army. He's been in Iraq, and he's going to tell us why the Army is discouraged. We've got Jeff DiCarlo on, our BioWave analyst, Rebel Tax Accountant. And we're going to have Mort Mortensen with the Remembrance. We're going to have Rapture Watch with Milf Milfington. We've got a great show. We're going to talk to Lawton Smalls in just a few minutes. It's Marc Maron, subbing for Cedar. Glad to be here. Hope you're having a good morning. We'll be back in a second, folks.
It's Casual Fridays, and we'll take your casual call on any casual topic. Call Sam Cedar at 866-303-2270. It's Casual-atastic.
Good God, folks. It's Marc Maron in for Sam Cedar. with Jimmy Earle.
Hey, how are you doing?
Coming to you from Los Angeles, but that doesn't matter. We're going into New York. We're going into everywhere else that Sam Cedar goes into, and we're there. We're with, and I wish Sam the best of luck moving. It's a horrendous day. Moving is a horrendous day. A lot to talk about today, but no time to do it. Thank you very much. We are going to take calls, 866-303-2270, in a little while, after Borzu Daragahi, who will be up in the next segment, talks to us about Iraq from India. We'll take some calls. Don't have a lot of time for calls because I overbooked the show. And right now, since our president, folks, is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that listeners know what's going on in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is our very own Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Hello, Lawton.
Hello, Sam. God called for a recount, and Jesus won again. Incumbent forever.
It's Mark. It's Mark. It's Mark Lawton.
Mark.
I never thought I'd say this, my friend, but I am glad you called, Lawton.
Mark, our moments of Christian fellowship are very special to me as well. Behold, how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Psalm 133, one of my favorites.
Wait. What I mean is no one's heard from you since the midterm elections when the Democrats totally, completely kicked your pathetic Republican ass. And I was worried about how you might be taking it, Lawton. That's all.
What are you saying, Mark? You think I'm not mature enough to handle the election results? That I'm subject to violent emotional outbursts? That I'm some sort of deranged infant who needs years of intense psychotherapy and the latest mood-stabilizing drugs?
Well, Lawton, actually, I do.
Sam, let the tempest blow and the rains fall. I take my shelter in the temple of neoconservatism. Lay your fears to rest. Smalls will abide. Okay.
That's great, Lawton. I'm glad you're okay. You know, I really am. I think. But what about the elections? I mean, both houses of Congress turned Democrat. Democratic state legislators, Democratic governors everywhere. It was a total bloodbath. I mean, that had to just tear you up. I mean, it had to rip you in half, didn't it?
Okay,
I mean,
it was an election, not the Nightmare on Elm Street, Mr. Freddy Krueger. And, as President George W., two terms mandate Bush, pointed out, the midterm elections were a sign of a robust economy.
Uh-huh.
The American Eagle's got to have a right wing and a left wing, or it won't soar. It
mm-hmm.
just flies around in circles and gets motion sickness. We don't need a puking eagle on our hands.
Wow. You know
don't
what? I agree with you, and that means that something's got to be wrong. All right? So let me just get this straight. So you're okay with Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House? Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I think Ms. Pelosi's got some real solid ideas, and she has lovely shoes. Very ladylike.
Wait a minute, Lawton. You hate her. I mean, you once told me she ran a chain of drive-through on-demand abortion huts. Am I right?
Water under the bridge, Mark. You know, yesterday's news. I'm looking forward to our parties working side by side to create a bright future for this great country. Let me be the first to reach across the aisle in a spirit of bipartisanship and shake your hand, Mark Maron. Welcome, brother.
Brother? Bipartisanship? Wait, you guys treated us like crap for 6 years, and now you're talking about bipartisanship? Do you even know what that word means, Lawton?
I do know what it means,
yeah.
And it disappoints me that you're being so negative when I'm offering you the olive branch. The lion is laying down with the lamb here, okay?
All right. All right, fine. All right, so now tell me what you, Lawton Smalls, what you think bipartisan means.
All right, now that's when both parties sit down and respectfully debate the issues of the day.
Okay.
And after careful discussion, ratify the president's agenda exactly as he envisioned it.
Whoa, wrong.
Bipartisanship.
Wrong.
Look it up.
Wrong. Listen to me,
look
buddy.
It up.
If you think some happy talk about working together means the Democrats are going to ratify Bush's agenda, wake up, little man. We've got you now. Wave goodbye to your tax cuts for the rich and subsidies for the oil companies. Get ready for congressional investigations into the corruption, greed, and incompetence of the past 6 years. Get ready to hear the word no. Get ready to hear it, Lawton. It's a new world. Your time is over, Lawton Smalls. Over. Yeah. Good. Go ahead. Cry. Go ahead. Yeah. That's right.
I've been wearing my Barbara Bush dress for 3 weeks now. It's all ripped and stained and the zipper broke and I got lipstick smeared all over my face and I chopped off all my hair with a hunting knife.
Yeah.
All my hair. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've been sleeping outside the drainage pipe. Uh-huh. I'm covered in my own duty. That's
okay,
squirrel
all right,
duty.
All right. Oh, boy.
I smell like defeat.
Uh-huh.
And duty.
Uh-huh,
a lot of duty.
Uh-huh.
This is what reality smells like. Does the duty smell ever go away?
Well, I don't know. Maybe if you took a shower, Lawton, and changed out of the Barbara Bush dress, you wouldn't smell like duty anymore.
Mark?
Yeah, what?
He failed me, didn't he? Bush.
Yeah, yeah. He did. Yeah, he did. Big time. He failed everybody, Lawton.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I'm going to take this dress off. It makes me look fat.
It's a good idea. You okay? Pull it together, buddy. You all right? You okay? Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I saw an eagle once with just the right wing. He just had one wing. He flew just fine, as it turns out.
Okay, all right.
No trouble at all,
good,
catching trout.
Goodbye, Lawton. Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you. Deal with it.
All right. Lawton Smalls, happy to talk to him.
Shaved off all his hair.
Pubic hair, yeah. I'm reading into that. Perhaps he did.
Yeah, I think
so. Let's prepare ourselves and shift gears a little bit, because in a few minutes we are going to talk to Borzu Daragahi. I am obsessed with Iraq and what is going on there, because it is beyond civil war. It is beyond anything we can even begin to understand. When I think about the death on a day-to-day basis that goes on all levels in that cauldron of chaos, I am baffled and amazed and completely full of anger towards this president, towards anybody on some level that supported this thing ever. But we will talk to Borzu. I know it's Casual Fridays, and this is about the heaviest guest we're going to have, but I think it's important to stay on top of this now as we watch what unfolds there and how our president is going to begin to kiss some global ass. So stay with us for Borzu and much more in the show. It's Mark Maron in for Cedar. Jim Earle is with me. We'll talk to you in a moment.
Sam Cedar on Air America Radio.
All right, folks. Mark Maron in for Cedar with Jim Earle. And when talking about Iraq, my friends, I don't even know where you start. I don't even know where to start trying to figure out what is really happening and what will happen with Iraq. Bush's Secretary, National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley, leaked a moment memo questioning Prime Minister Maliki's ability on almost all levels, personal and political. Muqtada al-Sadr and his Mahdi Brigade have pulled out of Maliki's government in protest of his now non-meeting with President Bush. Maliki snubbed Bush in Jordan. The police are operating as Shiite death squads, torturing and killing dozens of Sunnis almost daily. Western Iraq is literally becoming the Wild West for insurgent and al-Qaeda cowboys. The Iraqi security forces are still ill-trained and incapable of securing their country effectively. American equipment is breaking down. The James Baker Bipartisan Iraq Study Group, I don't even know what they're really even trying to do, is trying to politically make this seem like a withdrawal seem like attractive or somehow. I'm going to talk to Borzu about it, but they called for redeployment relatively soon without a timetable, which is almost meaningless, but it's something. Bush says there is no leaving until today, he said, unless Iraq wants us out. L.A. Times Baghdad Bureau Chief Borzu Daragahi is with us on the phone from India. Where do you want to start, Borzu?
Well, I mean, I think that it's just kind of interesting what's happening right now, just the past couple of days in Amman with the Bush arriving there and Cheney coming to Syria. There seems to be, to Saudi last weekend. There seems to be some kind of attempt to get the Sunni Arab allies on board with some kind of solution. The question is whether they have any influence whatsoever in Iraq at this point.
That's a question I want to know. It is unclear right now who, there is no one really in charge or in power. It seems like everything is very tentative. It's more than a civil war. There's a type of anarchy, isn't there, Borzu?
Absolutely. I mean, I think many people describe what's going on there as anarchy. There is a sort of civil war dynamic, Shiite militiamen attacking Sunnis, Sunni insurgents attacking Shiites. But then beyond that, you know, there's the constant attacks on the security forces and the U.S. forces. There's the criminal violence, tribal violence, intra-militia violence. There's just so much bloodshed and so much uncertainty as to what's happening there that it's calling it a civil war is almost too easy.
Now, let's talk about Maliki's power and his gambling on al-Sadr's support and conversely, I guess, Iran's support over the U.S. What is happening with al-Sadr? Is he out of the government for good? Is Maliki al-Sadr's puppet? And how does this play out for the Sunnis? Are they going to have to leave the country?
I think the Muqtada Sadr is a rebel cleric who's he breathes a lot of fire and brimstone, but I don't know if he has, first of all, I don't think he's actually formally pulled out of the government. He's suspended his participation, and I've seen that before. I think that whole move is overplayed somewhat. But, you know, I mean, Maliki, he did not succeed in widening his base, as it were. He is a Shiite activist, a very religious background. He came to power amid a lot of hope. And he did not basically expand his base. And so he's very dependent on people like Muqtada for his survival. And you know, not just his political survival, but his actual survival, because the party he represents, the Dawah Party, doesn't have a militia. So, you know, doesn't have an armed wing to protect him when the proverbial insurgents storm the Green Zone.
Now, it seems to me now that the Americans are there and you have the Shiite death squads to deal with who have infiltrated the police force or might even be a good part of the police force. You have Sunni insurgency. You have Al-Qaeda jihadists. And it just seems to me, what are the Americans doing there? It is unclear to me even, you know, whose side they are on in some respects. Are they just there to be a buffer? It seems that they're almost there for target practice for these people at some point.
Well, I think there is the U.S. Forces are still aggressively going after suspected insurgent strongholds and sites in western Iraq. They continue to conduct raids in conjunction with Iraqi security forces against Shiite militiamen. But these basically are pinpricks, in terms of the violence that's taking place in Iraq. It's not really having much of an effect on anything. And there's been a few instances that we've chronicled where there have been these sectarian massacres, and the U.S. forces were nearby, and they were not able or willing to intervene. Or, you know, and it's not maybe even fair to say that, you know, why didn't you stop this? Because how do you stop something like a neighbor killing a neighbor?
But when you say sectarian violence, are you talking about police actions in the guise of death squads against Sunnis? Because that would imply to me that they can't stop anything that's going on over there.
I mean, it's tough. You know, I mean, how do you, you know, you throw a bunch of guys in their early 20s into a situation, very well-trained, disciplined guys, by the way, into a situation where they're not exactly sure who the bad guy is, who the good guy is. I mean, we in the Western press have chronicled this many times, you know, and these soldiers are, you know, thrown into a situation where they're like, okay, keep the peace and keep the stability, but, you know, wait. Who do I keep, you know, safe? You know, are these the bad guys or are those the bad guys? And wait, those guys with the guns over there, they're coming and they're wearing police uniforms. Are they good guys? Are they bad guys? I hear these things about Shiite militiamen. Is that what these guys are doing? You know, these people coming here with their guns, they're standing there. Are they Sunni insurgents, or are they just a bunch of concerned guys, terrified, protecting their neighborhood and using guns to do that? You know, there's just basically no way to figure this situation out.
Wow, you just painted a picture that, to me, I've never heard it painted specifically like you just put it, Borzoo, and to me it sounds worse than Vietnam. But moving on, I want to know what happens now with President Bush. Today he says that he will, yesterday he says no graceful exit. We're still holding on to this, we're going to stay the course line. Today he says we'll leave if Iraq wants us to leave. It seems like a lot of politics is going on right now. I think that a talk with Iran and Syria probably, which is might be recommended by the Iraq Study Group, is inevitable, don't you think?
I don't know if it's inevitable. I think that Dick Cheney is, and there's still some people who are in the administration who are dead set against any kind of rapprochement with Iran. And plus, there's just many doubts. So first of all, I got to say, I think that Iran's role in Iraq is overstated. And I think that the Iranian government, quite cleverly allows it to be overstated. They don't dispute that they have a lot of influence in Iran. Well, I have doubts that they do. And there's, big questions as to whether they would be able to stop the violence or have any kind of influence, short of sending in 500,000 troops, which would be out of the question in Iraq. There's that issue. But I don't think the Americans have anything in Iraq to offer the Iranians that they could want, at this point. I think to a large extent, the current regime in Iran thinks that they've got the Americans right where they want them. And, they're not going to, do us any favors.
Well, talk to me a little bit before we go about our guest is Borzoo Daraghi, the L.A. Times Baghdad bureau chief. Talk to me a little bit about what I hear is going on, I believe, in western Iraq, to where there is literally an insurgent / terrorist state rising in terms of training international jihadists and also training the insurgency. How true is that?
I think that there is some evidence to support that. I think that what is absolutely true is that the, institution building in that part of the country, police, local government, civic organization, is absolutely nothing, And basically there is an extreme power vacuum in that part of the country where, political leaders are routinely assassinated or police don't show up for their jobs. And so you have a situation that is a vacuum. Who knows what, let's be honest here. Who knows what's going on in Anbar province? Because, we can't get out there. Our stringers are, basically shot at and arrested out there, the Iraqis, the locals. The soldiers are confined to their bases, largely. And when they go out, they go in quick, convoys, armored convoys through town. So who knows what's going on out there? Who knows if Al-Qaeda has control of the area?
Wow. Very sobering and disturbing news from Borzoo. Thank you so much for being with us, Borzoo Daraghi. I appreciate it. Man.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, you take care. Who knows what's even going on in the Anbar province? You heard it from a guy who spends time there. Who knows what's even going on? And given the fact that our government, the American government, did not even really realize that Al-Qaeda and the insurgency are capable of funding themselves at this point through a series of, hijacking oil, selling oil on the black market, and other manipulations of charities. And
bake sales.
A lot of Al-Qaeda bake sales are happening. To me, this thing is only getting more frightening. And the fact that, Maliki is in charge of Iraq and Bush is in charge of the United States gives me absolutely no confidence whatsoever in the entire event. But that is the most serious segment we're going to do here on Casual Friday. I just need to be up to date on this stuff as much as possible.
Well, what do you think the solution is? I want your opinion on this.
I think
you're an expert on these things.
I'm not an expert
at all.
You've
been following this for years.
Well, I've been following it for a couple of years, and unfortunately, I think the solution is to get our troops out of there as quick as possible and let the and provide some diplomatic support somehow to create some sense of stability or some movement towards stability in the region at large. Somebody has to talk to somebody else. I understand these are whatever Bush thinks they are, terrorist states. You can call them whatever you want, but ultimately these leaders want power. They want to play on the global stage, and there's a diplomatic solution when there is oil and money involved and people like Iran is selling oil to China and Russia. There's got to be a broader global solution than just harboring chaos and death. So look, 866-303-2270 is our number. If you've got anything you want to chime in with, I didn't really set up a topic or anything. I do want to talk about this new testing, this X-ray machine that allows them to see you as a naked ghost, which is disconcerting to me. But give us a call if you want. It's Marin in for Cedar. Jim Earl is with me. Be right back.
Sam Cedar. He puts the truth inside your radio.
Good God, folks. Mark Maron here in for Cedar, who is moving. You know,
Where is he moving from and to?
He's moving to his... He's got a house upstate New York. He's moving out of the New York apartment, I believe. And, you know, thankfully, he didn't ask me to help him move. He just asked me to host his show.
He has his people helping him.
I tell you, thank God they let that whale go back to work, huh? And they didn't shoot him. That was very nice.
Limbaugh?
Yeah, I'm talking about that killer whale that dragged his trainer underwater. You know, they didn't punish the whale. They realized, hey.
It's a killer whale.
Exactly.
Killer.
Let's take a couple calls. 866-303-2270. Deborah in Memphis, Tennessee. How are you?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, Deborah?
Yeah, I've just been wanting to develop a bumper sticker that says, support the war, draft Barbara and Jen. And I just thought, since President Bush had that little interchange with Senator-elect Webb, maybe now's the time to do it.
I think it's a great idea. If you print them up, I'll put one on my car. Thanks for calling, Deborah.
Okay, bye-bye.
I think the Bush twins should be the first to go somewhere. It's weird about draft, about Charlie Rangel, and about talking about a draft. And I've heard some people in the progressive community, not specifically about a military draft, but the idea of a draft for national service, where you're given a choice as to what sector you want to serve your national service in, is, to me, on some level, a fairly democratic and progressive idea. I don't know how I'd feel about it if I were 18 and frightened, but you know, given what I know about politics, given how politics and how civic service is taught in the schools and what it means, how unattractive it is to most people, the underpinnings of what makes this country great on a political level, I don't know how to instigate interest in it and to make it seem...
Well, if you have it forced domestic civil service instead of giving them the choice of either working, you know, in a park...
Yeah.
Or putting on a uniform.
Right. There's no reason you can't wear a uniform to work in a park. And sometimes, what's wrong with being a ranger? Did you have a problem with that uniform? I think that's a fairly proud uniform to wear, I think.
Ranger?
Yeah, park ranger.
Oh, no, I got nothing wrong with it. I'm talking about like a military uniform, like not like Yogi Bear and
but bow tie. A bow tie and a derby. He didn't have a derby. It was more of a
pork pie hat.
Pork pie hat.
Yeah.
Jerry in Long Island, how are you? Long time. How's it going?
How are you, Mark? Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. Yeah, well, I agree we should start with the Bush twins first if we're going to have any kind of draft like that. But on the other issue of Iraq, and I'm suspicious of the timing of the scheduled release of this Iraq study group's report next week. It's coming just a day after the confirmation hearings for Robert Gates. And Robert Gates is a member of this Iraq study group, and he's also Bush's nominee to be new defense secretary. And to me, it seems as if this Iraq study group is just going to be a political mirage and bait and switch. I mean, at first it seems to be poised to help Gates' confirmation and also by recommending, for example, what most Democrats and political progressives in general want, such as gradual withdrawal of U.S. troops, I think some 45,000 total from Iraq.
Yeah.
But the devil is in the details, as you were pointing out earlier. It establishes no timeline, and it doesn't actually use the word withdrawal. It uses the word pullback, which Democratic politicians will interpret to mean withdrawal, and the Republicans, as usual, parse their words and say, no, pullback doesn't mean withdrawal.
Yeah, I think I think you're right, Jerry. Thanks for calling. I think that what Jerry's saying is true, and I think that what we're seeing here is an intervention. More than anything else, what we're seeing here is a political intervention in the career of a president who has gone crazy. This is his father once again saying, look, I can get you off the hook on the cocaine bust. We'll get you some community service. You can help poor kids for a few months. Look, yeah. You don't have to go to war. I'll just get you this cushy gig.
He's
flying
been
airplanes.
Bailed out in every mess he's gotten into since buying with the ball team and the oil companies. And he's been a failure in all those. He's a failure in this. And his dad's coming to his rescue.
Exactly. Now, whatever you think about Gates, his involvement in Nicaragua, he's not. These aren't good guys per se. Jim Baker, I used to think, was literally the Antichrist. But if anything, and I think that Jerry is right, and I said it before, that the language around what is happening with the Iraq Study Group is just, it's doing damage control. It's rephrasing something over and over again that is already out there, and that is they're not putting a timeline on it, and they're trying to do some damage control in taking the reins away from this idiot. From George Bush, his father and his father's cronies are taking the reins away from the city. The only thing that we can hope for in a positive way that will come out of this is some diplomacy. I talked to a conservative guy over Thanksgiving, a guy who he's married to my cousin. He's not a bad guy, but he's a conservative guy. He's a conservative Jew, which is not, I'm a Jew. I'm not going to make judgment on that, though sometimes the Israel issue becomes a little loaded. But this guy says that what we don't understand is that these Islamic people, the generalization right off the bat, these Muslims, they have an ideology that we don't understand and that there's nothing else that we can do about it. Basically, he's saying, but kill them on some level. And there's just no way you can think like that. What is the end game like that? I understand that there are extremists on both sides, but for God's sake, if you believe in God, someone's got to talk to somebody. And I think the only thing that we can hope that may come out of this Iraq study group, if it's not going to be a full-on withdrawal as soon as possible, is that James Baker, being the sleazy, evil diplomat that he is, will facilitate some conversation to move to some stability in this region without sacrificing any more of our soldiers. I mean, this is a mistake that George Bush made. His father may be bailing him out, but look at how many people are dead and injured. Not to mention hundreds of thousands of Iraqis alongside of 20,000 plus Americans injured, 3,000 almost killed. And it's heinous. I can't look at him anymore. We'll take a few more calls over the top. 866-303-2270. It's Marin in for Cedar. Got a big second hour planned for you. Army Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph, Matt Taibbi, Morning Remembrance. Be right back. Stay with us.
Sam Cedar on Air America Radio.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. And, of course, Jim Earle. How are you, my friend?
I'm all right. I'm doing fine.
I'm Mark Maron. I'm in for Sam Cedar, who is moving today. If you're just tuning in, welcome. It's great to be back on the air talking to you folks. Coming up in this hour, we've got Rolling Stone columnist, neo-gonzo journalist Matt Taibbi to kind of explain to us, hopefully, a little bit about the Alexander Litvinenko assassination and why it should be important to Americans and what it means to the world in terms of how it went down. We've also got U.S. Army Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph to talk to us a little bit about what he thinks went wrong in Iraq. Also, BioWave analyst and renegade tax accountant Jeff DiCarlo will be here. Arish Barr later in the show. Taking a few calls. Let me before I take this, I'm going to take the call first and I'm going to talk about this. I got something sort of, very attracted or connected to a story I read a few days ago. It's old news, but there's something about it that moved me, and I want to share those feelings. And it's been eating at me for days. It's about this guy, Malachi Risher, who was a 52-year-old guy in Chicago, an anti-war activist who had started some websites and done some work around the anti-war campaign in the Chicago area and nationally a bit. And I guess on November 3rd at 6:30 in the morning, he went out and stood next to an on-ramp on the freeway and set up a video camera and set himself on fire in protest of the war and died. And nobody really knows about this. I didn't know about it. I didn't hear about it. But what I read about this guy made me think about some things. It made me think about, you know, what being a progressive, but more so, more than being a progressive, you know, what it feels like to be marginalized, to be overly sensitive, overly unique. There's so many people I talk to out there in the progressive world who, outside of their political leanings or outside of what they know about politics, are really very sensitive and very marginalized people. We are, in a lot of the progressive community, are very unique, and we live lifestyles that are very different than the mainstream lifestyle, and it's something to be proud of. But a lot of times, especially if there's a conservative government or a conservative trend in the country, it makes you feel even more marginalized than you already feel, because I'm reading about this guy who clearly had emotional problems, and he clearly had an alcohol problem, according to his son and to his family. But, you know, you read the description of the guy, and he considered himself a Renaissance man. He was a writer, a philosopher, a photographer. He collected fossils and glass eyes and light bulbs and snare drums. Now, I can't tell you how many times in my life I've walked into an apartment of a guy I barely know. He's like, check this out, dude. It's my glass eye collection. Now, whether or not he was trying to be unique or whether or not this is just what he was compelled towards, clearly he was living a lifestyle that was far from normal, and there's nothing to be ashamed about that. But somehow or another, this guy felt marginalized, and I think a lot of us do. And I think what's important and what's great about what's happening in the country is maybe some more of those voices can be heard, so you don't enter this type of frustration. Now, I'm not saying the guy should have killed himself, and clearly, you know, he saw this as a window of opportunity to do it with some meaning, and it didn't come. Like, I didn't hear about it. There are people now holding vigils for this guy just because they felt bad that no one paid attention to it. There's a couple things that are sad about this. I don't think this is a way to protest anything, but clearly if you're going to do it, you should really have a publicist of some kind and make a broader announcement in terms of taking this action. I think what really resonated with me is I didn't feel that different than this guy because I am not inherently a wonky person. Most of my political momentum comes from a resentment of authority, a resentment and a complete... I react horribly to being told what to do by almost anybody, certainly not bullied into believing a certain way or being told I have to believe a certain way in this country. And I just feel that a lot of us, if you're sensitive, you get pushed to the side. And I think a guy like this, who, you know, was a collector of things and a passionate musician and this and that.
Glass eyes.
But he just got pushed to the side. I don't know what I don't know why my heart goes out to him. All I can say is that there was a kindred spirit here, and I just wanted to acknowledge his passing because I felt it to be important. Right. Jim in Connecticut, what's on your mind? How are you, Jim?
Mark, I missed the heck out of you, brother. And I have some man love here this morning. You too, Jimmy. You guys are friggin' great.
Thanks,
but
man.
Anyway.
I miss you too.
Hey, man. Here's my point. You set me up well, as far as I'm concerned, and that is that the natural advantage of the progressive community is its creativity, and to use that, instead of complaining about, say, Karl Rove's tactics, we really should just set up, and I think you could do it personally. Mm-hmm. Take that right and early concept and just bilk those right-wing suckers for every cent they got, and then give it to the good guys. Let's set up like fake preachers and fake churches and just take their money and then just use it for a good cause, because I have had it with these people. You see what I'm saying, brother?
I do, Jim. Thanks for your call. I think that fake white, we could bilk them for whatever they have, you know, ideologically, without being fake about anything. I think that was a fascinating thing that happened with, now everyone's name's escaping me, but Barack Obama was to speak at a church during an AIDS awareness event with Sam Brownback, of all people, of Kansas, who is a senator, who is a theocratic, you know, delusional, crazy person in the way that he wants to run the country. But Barack Obama was being protested by the evangelical community, some of it, in terms of his presence at the church because of his stand on abortion. And yet he was there to promote AIDS awareness and raise awareness about a global epidemic, which is a Christian issue. That the one thing that Christians forget, and I don't want to spend too much time, you know, talking about Christians, because I think that we have to move on from that to some degree. And then whenever I do it, it tends to come out angrier than necessary, because I have found that I've met spiritual actual people who think along those lines who are not necessarily bad people. But the thing that he was trying to do and the thing that is apparent is that there are religious philanthropies that are important to progress. That taking care of the poor, taking care of the sick, reaching out to people that are lost or disenfranchised or need help, that is what the Christian way is built on. A lifestyle of peace and promoting peace. You got a couple of people who were tried to be fined and run out of their housing community by a housing board because they put a peace sign up, and one of the people who saw the peace sign said, I think that's a sign of the devil. Really? You are that into the devil and are that aware of the devil's signs to think that a peace sign is a sign of the devil without realizing that Jesus was a man of peace? The thing is that whatever these moral issues may have been used to divide the populace of this country into red state and blue state, whether it's the abortion issue or the right to die issue or teaching these, you know, prayer in school, whatever it is, those things have to be put back into your personal closet, because the problem is you can fight for those things on an individual level, but the important thing about the future of this country now is unity. And the truth of the matter is there's a lot of people with no insurance. There's a lot of people living below the poverty line. There's a lot of people that need help. The Christian thing to do is figure out how you can help your neighbor. It's Christmas, for God's sakes. They shouldn't be sitting there going, we don't think Barack should be here because of his feelings about abortion. Why don't you put that aside, fight that fight later, and understand what we all have in common. And that is, we need to start working together on all levels, not just to save humanity on some level, but to save the planet. There's a lot of things that are that become apparent, and Jim's call is provocative to me in the sense that right now, as progressives, when you look at the conservative ideologues out there, when you look at the pundits, they haven't got any real solid ground to stand on, and they're flailing, and you can really see what's at the core of them. All they care about is making money and dividing people and misleading people who are angry, ignorant, and themselves disenfranchised. And I never thought I would say this, folks. I was always a big fighter against the big tent idea in terms of the progressive movement and the Democratic Party. I thought early on that we have no room for any of these people, for anyone who was a conservative or was morally conservative. There's just no room for them, and they can all go to hell because that's the fight that we have. Now, I'm not talking about being a political centrist, but I am talking about a lot of lost souls who are now completely without anchor and no longer know what their priorities are. And the best thing that could happen is that they realize that their priorities are human priorities and not ideological priorities, and we can all get on the same page here around trying to get people insurance, trying to make cities safe in a practical way, you know, trying to get people fed in this country that aren't fed. I mean, this is the window of opportunity. And if doing that means creating fake preachers like our caller said, which I don't think is really it, I think what is really it is just by reaching out with progressive principles to people that may not understand that they need help. Let's take one more call. JJ Westchester, New York. What's up, buddy?
Hey, great job today.
Thanks, man.
Sure. I wanted to bring up what you were talking about, Bush's incompetence in fighting this war. And I want to point out that after 9/11 happened, a lot of the analysis in all of the weekly papers, like Newsweek and Time, said specifically that it seems as though we're trying to be drawn into the, you know, Arab-Israeli conflict, and that the worst thing that we could do would be to, you know, enter into some kind of ground assault, you know, willy-nilly against the wrong people, which would polarize the Arab world against us. And that's exactly what George Bush did by going into Iran and,
Iraq.
Iraq. And he, he's built up this force that now has a money machine, and it now has a strong military presence, and we're getting our asses kicked. And this recent statement yesterday just shows him, like, we'll get out if the Iraqis want us to. We've known through polls that they've wanted us to for the longest time. I mean, what kind of a weak, flip-flopping position is he all of a sudden taking now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for your call, JJ. You're absolutely right. This has been a money laundering event from day one. And I can I can only assume that they are as evil as I think they are, but the fact that they're going to walk away from this having filled the pockets of their cronies with billions of dollars at the cost of American lives, at the cost of Iraqi lives, at the cost of making the planet entirely unstable in terms of how it has created a terrorist training camp out of an entire country, again, and now Afghanistan as well, that they I don't even know if there's a circle in hell that exists for people like this, but I think that what JJ was saying is true, and that the diplomacy must start soon. And I hope that the Democrats can inspire some of that. And I just hope that if anything good comes out of this Iraq study group, it's that we move towards some talking, folks. We are people here. Coming up next, Army Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph is going to tell us where he thinks we went wrong. So stay with us for that. It's Marin on Cedar. It's 18 past the hour.
The Sam Cedar Show on Air America Radio. Wiping away political corruption. One dirty, filthy, stinking conservative at a time.
Folks, 23 past the hour, Mark Maron in for Sam Cedar. My buddy Jim Earle is here as well, having a good time. Sam is moving today. We'll be back on Monday. Folks, the troops on the ground in Iraq have their own opinions about how that war is being fought. On my old show, the Mark Maron Show, I built a relationship with a very outspoken soldier. He has worked in the area of recruiting. He's worked as an ethics trainer. He's here with us now to discuss what went wrong or what is going wrong with America's strategy in Iraq. Nice to talk with you again, Army Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mr. Marin. It's good to talk to you as well.
Well, listen, Lieutenant, a lot of people are starting to refer to the war in Iraq as a civil war. What is your take on that? Do you believe that?
Well, I mean, I think since the situation here has been declared a civil war, then, you know, I've decided to stop fighting personally. Because it's like a husband-wife argument now. They don't need me being a nosy neighbor. Especially if I, like a good neighbor, want to borrow things from them later, you know, like sugar and stuff. Because Iraq's having a little squabble, so I should just go home now so I'm not in the way when they start having makeup sex.
Well, makeup sex is a very optimistic thing. I've never heard anyone refer to the possible future of what is going on in Iraq as there's a potential for makeup sex. I'm going to take that as a positive thing. Now, from all indications, there's no set timetable for you guys to come home. You might be there a little while longer, maybe a long time, which I think is terrible. But how do you feel about it?
I don't think we can win.
Really?
Yeah, because, Mr. Marin, we haven't won the hearts and minds of the Iraqis. I mean, there's not enough America here. And, and I'm not just talking about the lack of soldiers. It's time the private sector got involved. I mean, we need, like, Baby Gap and Apple stores and Lowe's movie theaters and fast food joints, you know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe, you know, like, movie theaters, like, because if the Iraqis could see how they were portrayed in movies, they might stop fighting us because they look kind of silly in the movies. You know, plus we got the special effects ability to win wars in the movies, and it's only a matter of time before we do it for real.
Wait, so let me get this straight, Lieutenant Rudolph. You're saying that Iraqis will change their ways to look better in our movies so we portray them differently? I mean, I don't think that movies and fast food are really the answer, I have to tell
you. Fast food and movies are the one thing in America that we do well, because we're certainly not the number one superpower in the world. That's China. And they have KFC and McDonald's and all those great kung fu movies and that Jackie Chan dude. I mean, who doesn't enjoy an occasional Carl's Jr. Philly Cheese Steak Burger or a Wendy's Triple? Personally, I love watching the Star Wars movie. And what we don't realize is that these are secret weapons. This is our Death Star. I mean, look at Americans. They're all obese and apathetic and have ADD. We should bring that to Iraq. Slow these guys down, make a few dollars in the process.
I'm starting to understand your angle, and I think it's very interesting.
We should get porn and titty bars, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, just slow them down, get their minds off all that crazy religious stuff and political stuff. We need to shock them out with burgers and boobies. Get them all fat, bloated on McRib and buckets of chicken.
Yeah,
McDonald's could do even, like, the regional stuff. Like, you know, we got McRib, you know, they do McKebab or McTabbouleh or something like that. Because these folks, they're all too energetic.
Uh-huh.
You know, they yelling and jumping and just shouting all the time.
Uh-huh.
Maybe if they were a little fat and lazy, they'd be too tired to call us fat and lazy, and we could finally take over this place. Spread democracy.
Okay, so Representative Rangel, you know we're going to run out of time here in a minute, but what do you think the draft is a good idea?
No, I'm against the draft because I'm fed up. We've tried recruiting soldiers with fancy ads, video games, candy. It's not working. All right, we lowered the standards, let in high school dropouts, felons, drug addicts, retards. We let in retards and still nothing. They don't want us. We basically told people, hey, we're here, we're easy, nobody wants to get with us. Well, you know what? The Army's not desperate, all right? Yeah, we've shoved our boobs in the face of America, but America's not interested. So I guess, you know, America must be gay or something.
All right. Well, that's interesting. We got to go, Lieutenant. So you're saying the Army's playing hard to get, and I appreciate that. But thanks for joining us, Lieutenant Ronnie Rudolph. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Mr. Marin. And seriously, you should really think about coming into the Army.
All right, we'll be right back.
Sam Cedar on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron in for Cedar. Jim Earl is here with me. We're talking. We're doing the thing. We've got a lot of show coming up. Moments from now, we are going to hear from Jeff DiCarlo. Many of you don't know him, but he is a BioWave analyst and renegade tax accountant and a at-home activist. Great guest. But right now, I think, folks, Matt Taibbi is one of the few journalists actually picking up where Hunter S. Thompson left off. And sadly, that was long before he actually killed himself. Matt Taibbi has published his own satirical newspaper in Russia, played professional baseball for the Red Army. He is a regular contributor to Rolling Stone magazine, where his recent articles have torn the Republican Congress a few new ones. Now he's on the beat of the mysterious assassination of former FSB officer Alexander Litvinenko, and he's on the phone with us now. Nice to talk to you again, Matt.
Hey, how's it going, Mark?
I'm all right, man. So look, I need you to make this story as understandable as possible because it is convoluted. It is Russian politics, and I need you to make it relevant to me and the Yanks and the world at large, and I have complete faith in your ability to do that.
Yeah, it's not easy because this is an extremely complex story, and even people who have been watching Russian politics for years are throwing their hands up a little bit about this one because...
Well, one thing I do know is, as we speak, they're finding the radiation in 12 different locations around the world, bleeding from whoever assassinated this guy. Who was this guy?
Litvinenko was a guy who was a lieutenant in the lieutenant colonel in the FSB, which is the successor agency to the KGB, and he left the FSB several years ago to move to Britain. So he's sort of the modern day version of what we used to call a defector. And he has close ties to a number of exiled Russian political figures, including Boris Berezovsky, who was a sort of like the godfather of the Russian underworld until he had a falling out with Putin a few years ago, and moved to England, where he set up a shop, and he's sort of a gadfly in residence of the Russian expatriate community.
Right, anyway. And they just found a bunch of radiation in his office, and he was also critical of Putin, but he also knew Litvinenko. And I'm just trying to get the thrust of this is that Litvinenko claims that Putin killed him or had him killed, but you don't think so.
Well, no, I don't think, and also I have some doubts about the authorship of that letter that Litvinenko wrote. So do a lot of other people.
Why?
Well, it just doesn't sound like something he would write, and the only person that's vouching for the authenticity of that letter is one of the aides of this guy, Boris Berezovsky. But that's sort of a side issue. I think it's kind of important most important in this story is to know what Boris Berezovsky's role in this whole business is.
Berezovsky is a
former sort of underworld figure. He's one of the original oligarchs who was one of the major gangsters in the 90s post-communist Russia. And the rumors that are going around are that Berezovsky was one of the masterminds of the 1999 apartment bombings. Do you remember those?
Where were they?
This was just before the elections in the year 2000. There were a series of apartment bombings in Russian cities.
The Russians
blamed these on the Chechens, and they used it as a pretext to launch the Chechen war. And it also carried Putin into office as sort of on a sort of national security mandate, very similar to what happened after 9/11 here in the United States. But there's a lot of contention that it wasn't actually the Chechens who blew up those buildings, but it was actually the security agencies, Putin and this guy Berezovsky together all doing it. And the theory here is that Berezovsky, when he was kicked out of the country, said that if anything ever happens to me, all the information about those bombings is going to come out. And there are a lot of people who think that this assassination of Litvinenko was a shot across Putin's bow, saying that we can get this guy and next we'll get Berezovsky and all of this stuff will come out.
Okay, but Matt Taibbi, why do it with this particular radioactive substance? What is the message with that? It's messy, it's contaminated God knows how many sites. I mean, there's easier ways to kill people.
Exactly. The only reason you would use this particular substance is to let everybody in the world know who did it and to make it as messy as possible. And, of course, you have to do it in a Western country where it causes a huge scandal and seriously angers your Western allies.
Why would everybody know where this came from?
Well, because, people who are even analyzing this substance are going to know that it didn't come from any known source in the West. They're going to know that it probably came from Russia. This is designed to embarrass Vladimir Putin. I mean, that had to be one of the primary motives of this murder. That's what most of the people who in Russia who are analyzing this murder believe right now. And so that's why most of the theories about this murder, about what it meant, center upon a faction within the government that is trying to embarrass Putin and force him to make some kind of decision. That's in their interests, and most people think that what they're trying to make him do is to remain in office and not step down when his term limit expires in 2008. And I know this all sounds crazy, and it sounds like it doesn't make any sense at all. But in terms of Russian politics, believe me, this is about as rational as it gets.
But I'll tell you, Matt Taibbi, it doesn't sound crazy to me because I've heard this type of speculation around American politics at this point in history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think we're moving in that direction. Unfortunately, but,
well, this is you're basically saying that that a bunch of renegade, primarily black market outlaw business interests are using this as a way to hold Putin political hostage to a certain degree.
Yeah, well, maybe it wouldn't be so much black market political interests as sort of the hardliner anti-democratic forces, who are kind of growing out of the old KGB world. I think.
And Berezovsky, Berezovsky's one of them.
Well, no, Berezovsky's in exile. It's complicated. It's hard to explain. Berezovsky's out of the picture. He's in England. The guys who they think did this are, there's a guy named Igor Sechin, who is always Putin's right-hand man, but he's sort of like the chief of the kind of shadow government in Russia. He's the biggest hardliner KGB type underneath Putin. He's always been his Svengali. If Putin leaves office in 2008, he's going to be kicked out of power by the liberals in the government. And the theory is that he doesn't want to leave and he doesn't want to recede power. So he's trying to keep Putin in office.
Okay. All right. So Berezovsky acted as sort of a nefarious troubleshooter for this operation, is your contention?
It's more like he was just an opportunist taking advantage of it and blaming it and using it to embarrass Putin he hired a PR agency, for instance, to publicize this incident.
Okay, let's talk about this radioactive this substance. What is it? It's polonium. Is it, what's it called?
It's polonium-210.
Go ahead.
Believe it or not, I used to have a friend who was a professional clown who worked in a factory where they made this substance. Before he became a clown, he was an engineer in a nuclear research facility, and they made this substance in a town called Arzamas 16, which is sort of like the Russian Los Alamos. Used now, I guess, as a power source in space satellites and in spacecraft. But it used to be in the 50s. They also used it when they were making a prototype of a kind of, I guess, what we call a dirty bomb these days. Before they had large stocks of conventional nuclear weapons.
In the 50s, they were talking about dirty bombs, and I think that the point that you seem to be making is that the broader implications about this substance and about this action, this assassination, is that it really is this is the first time I have heard someone using a radioactive substance to actively kill somebody.
Yeah, no. What's really scary about this is that this is an instance where dangerous nuclear material somehow escaped the chain of command and was used by rogue elements,
right,
either in the government or outside the government, to commit an act of terrorism. And when you think about how much stuff there is in Russia to steal and to use as weapons, this is a terrible, precedent to be setting, that someone could get their hands on this. And there are a lot of theories about where this polonium came from, and not all of it involves it being pinched by the, people within the government. It could have come, for instance, from elements within the Chechen separatist movement. And if that's the case, that's very, very frightening.
It might have been on eBay. I mean, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Could have been anywhere.
All right,
go ahead.
Sorry. All right, Matt. So is now this piece that you're working on around this, is it going to be in the next Rolling Stone?
It's online. I have a weekly column on RollingStone.com, so there's a piece on it there.
Great talking to you, Matt Taibbi. Thanks again for hanging out.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mark.
You take care. So when we come back, I'll tell you before we take off, that to me is frightening, that they would use a radioactive substance for an assassination. And you read the press that continues to come out on this. There is traces of this stuff everywhere in Europe. It's around the world. It's on airplanes. That Pandora's box to me is really frightening. I don't mean to disrupt your casual Friday morning. It's Marin in for Cedar. We'll be back with Morning Remembrance with Mort Mortensen. It's 44 past the hour.
It's Sam Cedar introducing whiny ass teeny baby conservatives to the truth. Wow, wow, conservatives. That's you crying.
Up on 50 past the hour, it's Marin in for Cedar. Sam Cedar is moving his stuff. He's got a little wagon train going up state with his wife and kid all bundled up there in the wagon. Yeah, giddy up.
Upstate where?
New York, Jim.
What part of New York, though?
I don't know.
Saratoga Springs?
I don't know.
Hot Springs?
I don't know, I said.
Lake Champlain?
I don't know. Somewhere up there where it's cold and nice. And
Rouse's Point?
You get a little fire going with the chestnuts on it and stuff. But if you're a Jew, you don't do... Well, you can still... Come on, he's married to a Gentile as well. Not unlike me. Sam will probably be shopping for a Christmas tree soon. Oh, that's a high point. Hey, let me tell you, folks, we got a lot of good show coming up left. We got Arise Barr is going to be here to discuss her one-woman show, DAI. It takes place in Israel and Tel Aviv. It's at the Culture Project. We've got Jeff DiCarlo, the bioweth analyst, renegade tax accountant, work-from-the-home activist, will be on the phone. But right now, to help us reflect in our times of sorrow and look back on the lives of the recently departed, we present grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance.
Oh,
yeah, one of those days, huh?
Oh, it's been a long month. Let me start out with this this man, Maurice Graham, King of the Hobos. King of the Hobos, Maurice Graham, finally caught the westbound train last week. After telling loved ones he was dogging it to a couple of soup bowls for a handful of snipes and some spear biscuits. First witnesses thought he was just chucking a dummy in order to give a bowl and a couple of bone polishers the slip.
Yeah.
While others thought maybe he caught a bug after frying up some bad mix on his banjo. Even the local punk said maybe he'd gone rum-dum for the corner slop-tart. But they were easy marks, and soon we're back honey dipping at the county big house.
Yeah.
Suffice it to say, Maurice is up in heaven, packing the mustard, hitting the grit, sharing some nickel notes, and jawboning around the boodle. Yeah, all's hunky-dory in Clown Town.
Mort! What the hell did all that mean?
I have no friggin' idea, Mark. But I do know this. There's one less guy in stinky clothing taking a dump in the Amtrak parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, perennial favorite, Graham was voted National Hobo King 5 times at Iowa's annual hobo convention after 2 other contestants were frozen out of the competition when they were discovered frozen in the asparagus car. They're hobos.
Yeah, I get it, man. You all right?
Yeah, I get teary-eyed sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
Graham once told reporters, quote, "A hobo is just a guy who went camping and never came home." By the way, that description also applies to axe murderers, the grizzly man, and your gay uncle who just left his wife.
Mine?
Yeah. When he finally returned home for good, the white-bearded Graham... Wow, that music gets loud.
Yeah.
The white-bearded Graham adopted a new identity by dressing up as Santa Claus and spending the next 30 years puzzling children by asking them for work. Graham requested people throw down a half a yard or at least an ace spot or two to help fellow yeggs get unhooked from speedball and ink.
Yeah, I love that hobo talk. You can be all right?
Oh.
You going to get through this?
You got a ficus in here?
Yeah, there might be.
Something,
I don't know.
Something in my
it's
eye.
It's not our place, you know.
Allergies. I'm not crying.
Okay.
Bill Larson, founder of Round Table Pizza.
Oh, no. This is going to be good.
Bill Larson, the founder of Round Table Pizza, died Wednesday after his heart, stuffed with a delicious blend of 3 cheeses, refused to pump another ounce of that zesty red sauce. Larson's body was found limp and soggy, wedged between 2 old sofa cushions and a beer-stained copy of Screw magazine.
Oh.
It's pizza.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I know.
Larson started the restaurant way back in 1959, Mark.
Yeah, I heard that.
Naming it Round Table, after the redwood tables he and his father lovingly built and later made into pizzas.
Yeah, okay.
Over the years, the company became known for making the last honest pizza. Other slogans included, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman pizza,"
uh-huh.
"Swift Boat Veterans for Truth pizza," and "Seriously, that's not a wart pizza."
Seriously, folks, not a wart.
Not a wart pizza.
Yeah, okay.
I only put it in the halfway pizza. I can go on.
There's a lot of them.
A lot of bad slogans that just did not make it.
We only have so much show.
Larson requested his remains be wrapped in aluminum foil and stored in the refrigerator until they could be consumed by his family while watching reruns of Matlock. Because he's made pizza.
Yeah, it's pizza, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. It's hard,
the
man.
Sorrow, the
yeah,
pain.
Yeah.
This has been the weekly remembrance. Until next time, this is Mort Mortensen saying... Who's chopping onions?
Oh, wow. That was great, Mort. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah, I really appreciate that you come by. Send Jim back in, will you? So, folks, look, Phoenix Airport, I read this morning. I don't know how long this technology has been around, but they now have that, and I think they've had it for a while. And I do a bit about this, about that it's going to get to a point where you're going to get to the airport, you're going to go through security, you're going to get to security, and they're going to say, could you please remove all your clothing and put on this smock? And they're going to give you a disposable smock like you get at the doctor's office, and you're going to pick your clothes up on the other end. They're going to put you in a machine that is going to kind of probe and analyze everything about you. You're going to get onto that plane. And this is how fear works in this country, because the first time they put these kind of machines into play, people will be on the plane going, that's wrong. I mean, I think it hurt me inside. I don't feel well. Those machines are bad. And someone's going to go, hey, it's the price that has to be paid for national security. And they're like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. And then a month later, people are going to be like, hey, you know, this is not so bad. They fix the machines and give you a lollipop when you're done.
They don't need to probe you anymore. They have the spectral imaging.
Well, not only that, they have this thing where you walk in and basically the X-ray vision makes you naked and they can see you naked.
That's how they uncover the mystery of the Antikythera mechanism.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is, but it sounds good to me, Jim.
The Antikythera mechanism.
What is it?
It's discovered 100 years ago in an ancient Greek shipwreck off the coast of the island of Antikythera. And it was this box that had this brass instrument in it, mechanical instrument in it, made in the first century B.C. Greece.
But were they trying to get through airport security? I don't understand.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. Am
You're
I dim?
So
am I
ignorant.
Thick? It makes me uncomfortable. And the safeguards they put in to this technology is that the people at the gate, at the security gate, are not going to be viewing it. It's going to be up in an office. So you don't get that embarrassed.
So.
You don't get that embarrassing, like,
I hope it's put on the web.
Look at it, like, oh, damn, look at that. There's not going to be any of that going on. I don't know. It makes me uncomfortable.
I hope they put it on the web so I can see it, too.
That's the problem with this stuff, is it will get on the web. We're going to be back with Rapture Watch, Jeff DiCarlo, Arish Barr, and more Marin on Cedar. It's coming up on the top of the hour, about 57 past, to be perfectly honest with you. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Cedar on Air America Radio.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Of course, you lurking conservatives, it is I, Mark Maron, in for Sam Cedar this morning, who is moving, taking the crew upstate. Jim Earle is with me. Nice to see you, Jim, hour three. We're doing that. I've had a great time. I have overbooked the show, but that's okay. It's Casual Friday. It's entertainment time. We've got a lot of fun still in store, my friends.
Oh, man.
If it's okay to have fun, if we can have some fun, we're going to be talking to Jeff DiCarlo shortly. A lot of you may not know Jeff. He was a regular on the Mark Maron show out of Los Angeles. He's a biowave analyst and a renegade tax accountant, an at-home activist. Always great to talk to him. Arish Barr, also in this hour, is going to be telling us about her one-woman show, which is now playing at the Culture Project there in New York City, Tuesday through Saturday at 8 p.m. It's called DAI, D-A-I. It takes place in a cafe, I believe, in Tel Aviv. It's a one-woman show, many characters. Some of you may know Arish. She did a character on the Mark Maron show called Svetlana, a Russian prostitute slash movie critic, who I believe is also makes an appearance in her one-woman show. Right now, though, folks, Friday, Casual Friday, as Sam calls it, the Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. But we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world, folks. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Probe, Utah. Your grace?
Lift your lying eyes to God's lone light bulb of salvation, ye dust mites of Babylon. For it is time you stop scuttling between the folds of Satan's soiled sheets and face the dreaded Dutch oven of truth. Ye have sucked your last mortal morsel of sin from the spicy hot wings of damnation. Soon we'll be suffering the burning acid reflux of Christ's holy bowels. The rapture is upon us, ye contractors of carnal desires. For your hearts are rotting with sin, and your souls become the decaying foundation of Motel 666. Seriously, how many times I got to tell you this crap? The end times are near. Now, you may recall it how thrice hebdomenals ago I told you how a burning squirrel suddenly appeared in the fireplace of a terrified family. A week after that, I told you how a naked man was pulled from the jaws of an alligator. And the week after that, I told you if you're going to throw a squirrel down your neighbor's fireplace, don't be surprised when they throw your drunk naked ass into the local alligator pond. But that's neither cantasa cantasa nor cantasa cantasa. For I am, you heard it right.
It's neither one of those.
Neither one. For I am here to tell you about something so earth-shattering, it'll make something impressive seem even more impressive. Mark?
Yes?
Brace yourself.
I'm here, I'm braced.
2 months from now, the U.S. of A., or as I like to call it, the United Satans of Antichrist, will start releasing new dollar signs featuring images of American presidents. Now, I strongly agree with the need to celebrate the legacy of Jefferson Davis. There's something very sinister behind the good news here. You guessed it. They're going to move the words, "In God We Trust," from the face of the coins to the edges. To the edges!
Oh!
Mark, aside from Owen Wilson getting any kind of acting award, this almost certainly is the end-time indicator of all end-time indicators. "In God We Trust" has been the official national motto since the inception of our Christian country way back in 1956. What are they going to fool with next? All that weird Masonic crap on the back of the dollar bill? Don't make me plots! On the edges, Mark! Not only are they relegating Jesus to the evil third side of pocket change, but now they're removing his name closer to that ungodly rash on my left thigh. In the shape of a snake tattoo or something. I don't know what the hell's going on with my left thigh, but I got to see a doctor. I wish I had health care. Anyway, and so, as you and the rest of the world's anti-Gibson Semites share in the devil's carnal mirth, it can only mean one thing. Midnight is upon us. For it was prophesied in Revelation, 6 geese a-lain and a partridge in a pear tree, and I quoteth, "And God will hath prepared for you such things that you have never before seen. Then Christ will stand before thee and ask, can you see it now? How about now? Better now or now? Better this way or that? You have a slight stigmatism. Have you been masturbating?" End quoteth. Well, there you have it. Soon you'll all be in hell fishing Susan B. Anthony's out of Satan's colon, while I'll be sitting at the throne of Christ and his anger management coach, Tyler. Until then, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and I'll keep the light on for you. In hell!
Wow, that was great. Thanks. Send Jim back in, Cardinal. Jim?
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey.
Yeah, nice to see you.
That was very powerful. Hit on a lot of important points.
I was doing all the sound work myself on that one, Jim.
I know, man. You're like a Foley artist here.
Well, it's incredible.
Did you do a door slam?
I don't know. Nothing's labeled. I don't know. I was twirling this knob to make it do something without pausing in between the things. And then I found that I didn't know how to do that. And so I had to pause in between. I was very concerned.
You broke the union. You went across union lines.
Oh,
there.
With these two switches, I was completely consumed. And I almost lost touch with what was going on here in the studio. I had to check back in to laugh and understand what was happening. And thank God we got through that, man. It was touch and go, I tell you. Touch and go, Jim. So, my friend,
the Antikythera mechanism.
A lot of people don't know what you've been up to. Some listeners of the Sam Cedar show who used to listen to Morning Sedition and the Mark Maron show, curious about what the hell's Jim Earle been doing.
Well, I've been trying to patch up some really big gapes in my glass eye collection.
It's
a big breakthrough recently, so maybe I'll be able to complete that.
You found there's a storage locker found filled with glass eyes?
Evidently, there's glass eyes galore.
And some guy on eBay is like, glass eyes, while we got them.
Now, if I could only somehow, put that, connect that to my snare drum collection.
Well, is there any room in that house? I mean, you've got stacks of snare drums. Look, I tell you, as funny as this may be to us, don't let it get you down, Jim. Don't let it get you down.
I won't. No. What have I been doing? Well, I did a set at the Fake Gallery on Melrose last night.
I am yet to have gone down there. That's Melrose Avenue here in Los Angeles.
Funnest place to do comedy in Los Angeles.
I am now performing regularly at the Dark and Horrifying Comedy Store, which I swore I would never go back to. But now,
isn't that where Michael Richards?
No, he snapped at the Laugh Factory.
Laugh Factory.
That hasn't been talked about enough. He's on TV, on CNN, with Jesse Jackson, with the head of the NAACP, mm-hmm. And he's talking about how, like, this is, I think, really has begun to facilitate some conversations between the African-American community and the white community. I'm like, you're standing right there. You're the guy who said it.
Yeah. And he apologized again on the radio, too, blaming it, quote, on the Japs.
Oh, no.
Man. What is wrong with that guy? I do not understand. That's not the way to go.
I don't know, Jim. Yeah. I don't know. But it's always nice to see you, and Heather's well, and everybody's good.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful to know that. I've missed being on the radio. I very much enjoy hanging out, and I'm glad that Sam's gone today. I hope he goes away more often. I had something else I was going to say, and now I'm kind of scrambling to find it in my head because it was
You're curious about the Antikythera mechanism.
That I have to do research on. That you brought up, I have to do research on. I've just recently gotten over the horrible possum incident. I think I talked to you about that.
You killed a possum in your front yard.
Oh, God. But I don't know if you realize that. I did, and it took me a long time to realize it was dead after I Googled possum and found out that they can play possum for up to 4 hours, and then I went to bed thinking it would get up, and I got up, and it was dead, and then I threw it in the garbage, and they were supposed to come pick it up. The city was supposed to come to dead animal retrieval guys,
mm-hmm.
but they never came, so I sat in the dumpster for 6 days. And I may not be a religious person, but I do have the mechanism for belief in my head, because I will tell you, Jim Earl, every day that possum was out in the dumpster, I did go out and check to see if it magically came back to life like a possum Jesus, and perhaps would spend the rest of its days ethereally leading animals that are victims of human mistakes into the light. But no, I think it remained dead.
You should have sent a video of it to Bill Frist. Maybe he would have
resurrected it somehow.
Yeah.
Done a little open heart surgery on it.
Had some advice on it.
I tell you, I should have made a video of something, some part of the whole process. I got to get a video and have it in my car. I'm so far behind everything. If I just had a video of that moment, I could have put it on YouTube and gotten some hits.
I just drove your car for about 10 yards. It smelled like the pickup truck of a farmer from Kansas. What the hell are you smoking in there? What is the car's like a dumpster?
It smells bad.
Full of cigarette butts and...
No, and there's no cigarette butts in there. I might have gotten a little cigar stink in there. I'm not smoking a lot of cigars, but I do have a nicotine problem that is unmanageable, and it's not a posturing thing. It's really just about nicotine or cheap cigars. Look, folks, coming up next, we got Jeff DiCarlo. After that, Arise Barr, Sam Cedar, out of town, Mark Maron, in for him, 16 past. Stay with us.
Killing time before the rapture.
The end is near. We are all going to die.
Call Sam Cedar at 866-303-2270. Sam Cedar.
You make the Lord very nervous.
On Air America Radio.
All right, Maron in for Cedar with Earl, Jim Earl,
mm-hmm.
Mark Maron, Sam Cedar moving to upstate New York, or perhaps sleeping at this very moment, or probably to be immersed in moving is horrendous.
Syracuse, Albany?
No, it's not that far up. It's up around Hudson area, kind of like just past Poughkeepsie somewhere. As many of you folks know from listening to the old Mark Maron show, the few of you that could get it, that paid the premium and were satisfied daily, with the sort of inconsistent podcasts and whatnot. I wonder what's happening at the Air America office. Folks, by the way, it is World's AIDS Day. I'm an idiot. I didn't know it was World's AIDS Day. There's so many things I miss. I don't get the briefing, but I heard the commercial on the break, and I'm like, oh, what an idiot. It's World's AIDS Day. Go to worldsaidsday.org if you want to get involved or raise your awareness or get a ribbon or what you need to do. I just feel bad. I would have themed the entire show around AIDS had I known that it was World's AIDS. That probably wouldn't have been a great idea. It is Casual Friday, but it is also World's AIDS Day. As many of you know, as I said from listening to the old show, Jeff DiCarlo is a renegade tax accountant. He's a bio-wave analyst. He's a vegan, and he's a work-from-home revolutionary at the cutting edge of his bed. He's with us now. Welcome back to the show, Jeff DiCarlo. How you been? What's going on, buddy?
I'm Phil, thank you for having me, Mark and Jim. It's great to talk to you guys again. You know, I'm not great, I have to be honest, and I'm glad you talked to me. I wanted to have an important, I know it's World AIDS Day, and it's a health issue, and that's sort of along the lines of what I wanted to talk about is, you've discussed it before, but I think it needs to be said again. I want to talk about the deplorable lack of health care in this country.
Uh-huh, sure. Go ahead.
Just overwhelming, and I've been sparked into action because it's affected me personally
Really?
Yeah, as recently as last night.
Really? Well, I mean, because this is sort of a departure for you. I've never heard you talk about such a specific issue. Why this issue now, Jeff?
Well, sometimes, you know, it takes a harsh wake-up call, and mine came last night when I was making potato salad, and I had hot potato water that I was transferring from the stove to my sink.
Yeah.
I spilled the water all down my leg,
uh-huh.
and I was wearing my my different colored Converse, and the potato water got inside, and it took, I mean, it was like, it's not funny, but it was like a slapstick. I was jumping up and down trying to pull the shoe off because it was holding in the hot water. And anyway, the long story short, I have a bump on my head from falling, and I have what looks like a third degree burn on my foot.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I can understand why this is important now.
Well, now, you know, now I can't look for work.
Yeah.
I can't, and even if I did have work, I wouldn't be able to go to that work.
Right,
you know,
sure,
because
sure.
I can't. My foot is red and raw, and it hurts.
That's awful. It's awful. So what have you been doing to raise awareness of this issue and activate some action around it? What have you been doing for the last 24 hours?
Oh, well, I've been calling friends and seeing if they can come, help me out. And that's why I called you guys. That's why I called, because I know that you know your listeners, they care. They care about a brother in peril.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think of myself as a mumia of healthcare.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you want our listeners? How can they help you in this?
Well,
fight?
If they really care about uh-huh. this country, if they really want to send a message to Washington, if uh-huh. they really want to say to the rest of the world, look, it's the government, it's not us that doesn't care about health care.
Uh-huh.
We understand this is an important issue. What they can do right now, not tomorrow, not yesterday, right now, is get in a car, go to a store, buy a six-pack of preferably Red Hook IPA or some Hefeweizen and bring it to me.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm allergic to Vicodin, so I can't. That's not an option.
Yeah, sure.
They can go to Pima Thai.
Uh-huh.
It's on Fairfax and
uh-huh.
Bronson.
Uh-huh.
They can get some Tom Kha Kai soup.
Yeah.
Not. I'm jumping right back on the horse here because I got a hot liquid, but bring that to me.
Yeah.
They can. If anybody has a recipe for a salve or a poultice, all I have here is I just have Airborne and Bengay, and that's not gonna.
Do you need bandages? You need some gauze?
Actually, no. My neighbor makes gauze, so I'm fine.
Are you okay for cigarettes and everything?
I could always use some. You know, I'm 1/18 Cherokee,
and the
cigarettes that I smoke are ceremonial.
Yeah. So you like the American Spirit, right? If I'm not,
I'd smoke 3 ceremonial packs of American Spirit a day.
Okay. Now, what are you hoping to achieve with this action, Jeff? What's really the long term thing?
Okay. Well, it's good important to have goals. With the beer, I'm hoping to achieve a little less pain. That I'm in. With the soup, I'm hoping to get the strength and the nourishment that I'm going to need to write letters to What I need to do before I can, this is all related, before I even think about getting for a job is some intense journaling. And before I do that, I'm going to need, you have to break this down to manageable steps.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up here.
So if people, I live on the corner, essentially I'm just near, I'm actually, I used to be up at the.
All right, Jeff. All right,
just ask around. If you go to the bagel broker on Beverly and ask for me.
Okay. Well, I hope you manage through this. We'll be back with a Reese Bar. Thank you, Jeff DiCarlo.
Thank you.
Stay with us.
Sam Cedar on Air America Radio.
All right. Okay, 34 past the hour, Marin in for Cedar. who's moving. Got Jim Earl with me. Jim, before I bring on our guest here,
yeah.
Did you listen to that new Beatles album? I know you know you're the Beatles guy. You're a Beatleista, Beatles fascist.
Yeah.
Did you hear the new mix by George Martin and his son?
For which album?
This new mix that they use for the Cirque du Soleil performance.
No, I haven't heard that. No,
that seems kind of interesting. Does it still have integrity if George Martin did it? Does it matter?
But yeah, I don't know. You know, he said long ago that he no longer had an ear.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't participate in BBC thing.
Well, he's got his kid, though. His kid, I forget the guy's name, Kyle or some English sign.
Kyle Martin?
No, it's not that.
Seventh Beatle?
Yeah, I don't know what the guy's name is, but it's the Martin son was there to be his dad's ear. Arish Barr, folks, was a frequent guest on the old Marc Maron show where she played Svetlana, the Russian horror movie critic. She's now starring in her own one-woman show, a multi-personality show. It's here in New York City at the Culture Project. It's called Die. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It is running at the Culture Project through the 16th of December and moving on to the new space. It's at 8 p.m. It's Tuesday through Saturday. Now, let's talk about it. Welcome to the show, Arish Barr.
Thank you, Mark.
So, look, this show, lay it out for me. It takes place in Tel Aviv?
It takes place in a cafe in Tel Aviv about minutes before a suicide bomber enters.
Well, and that's heavy.
Yeah, but it's actually a fun show.
But does everyone know? If you're telling me everyone knows that when they go into the show that something awful is about
to happen. Well, I think they
know
by now. I mean, I think that the reviews and the synopses have kept.
When you originally did the show, was that something you didn't want to tell anybody, or was that always in the program? Like on the eve of, moments before a suicide bomb or an hour before?
I think people knew that they don't know when it's coming and they don't know how it's going to be laid out. So I think people are surprised when it does happen.
It actually happens during the show?
Yeah, it happens, yes, numerous times. So it's I wanted to create this visceral experience for the audience where I don't want to give away too much, obviously, but just this kind of feeling where you don't know what's going to happen at any given moment, which I think everybody feels in life, but in Israel and other places, obviously, it's more heightened.
I felt that when I was in Israel. I can't. I have a hard time going. I'm a bad Jew. I don't. I'm afraid to go there.
I don't even
know what die means. What does die mean?
It means enough. Like stop already. Die, Dayenu. You know, you've done some Passover, right?
Die. But what's the full translation of that?
Dayenu, it was enough for us. That's like if God had saved us from whatever, it was enough.
So that's a celebratory enough.
Yes, exactly.
God is good for us. Whatever he does
whatever
is okay
does.
By me.
Exactly.
So, are you an Israeli? Are you consider yourself an Israeli?
Yeah, I have kind of a splintered identity, which is kind of how I came to write this show. You know, I grew up in the Bronx, and then I moved to Israel when I was 12, and I stayed there till after the army. I served in the army for 2 years. And I've always had this conflicted, not only identity, but also, obviously, politically, I've felt kind of torn in how I feel about what's going on back home.
And that's so you gave voice to that through how many characters now?
I think about 11 characters.
You think about 11?
Yeah.
You may be surprised on any given night. Like, oh, my God, where did that one come from?
Exactly. No, I haven't. I've never really counted. But, yes, I think about 10 or 11.
Where one character goes, who the hell is Shlomo? I don't know. He's never been here before. I've been eating at this cafe for weeks.
He has back hair. I don't understand. Yeah.
So now, how is this show? First of all, it's doing well, right?
Yes, it is doing well. You know, we need to get the word out. I think that it's definitely a word of mouth kind of show.
Well, in New York, you would think that there are people just chomping at the bit to go to a show. New York has got a tremendous theater audience, community, and I would think that old Jews would love this show.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, I think people are always afraid of polemic. You know, they're shy away from things like that, and I want to emphasize that it's not that. It's not a polemic. It's my first goal was to make something that's entertaining and enjoyable. I know that sounds kind of, you know, hard when you're dealing with a suicide bombing, but these stories, these people, it's about the humanity. It's not about, this is my view on the Middle East, look at our side or this side. I explore many sides, and that's the whole point. And it's not, oh, look at the plight of the Israelis or look at the plight of the Palestinians. It's about, these are these people that I've come to know. I mean, they're not real, you know, that I've created, but I've come to know them in terms of their psyche. And these are human stories, just like any other, you know.
Absolutely. And I would think that it's not one polemic. It's probably many. And I think that's probably one of the great things about Israeli culture in general is that people
are certainly passionate about why, where they stand and why they are in Israel and what they feel the solution is.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and some of these people that in the show, they don't even have a political opinion because they're just trying to live their life. Tel Aviv is kind of a microcosm in that way that, you know, it's a kind of very cosmopolitan city and people just want to live their life and, you know, and buy a new house and, you know, whatever. It's removed and not removed, or people try to remove themselves in some regard.
It's interesting that, you know, some of the criticism in terms of, you know, outside of whether or not Olmert, is that how you pronounce
Olmert,
it?
Olmert, yeah.
Olmert should have bombed Hezbollah as he did. But one of the things that I heard was that the army is not what it used to be. When, say, your parents' generation were there in terms of their commitment to protecting the state of Israel, they see it more as like something they have to do. And I heard some criticism that they might not have their heart in it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that these days people, the generation that fought for the, you know, the creation of the state of Israel, it's not that generation anymore. And people have opportunities to live all over the world and they're questioning if they have to live there or why they live there. And is it worth their life, you know? And I think that there's one character in the show who lives in New York, who lives in Long Island. I mean, there's no shortage of Israelis in New York, as you know. And
sure.
And she came to a point where she's like, I'm not going to sacrifice my husband. You know, I'm not going to worry about him every time he goes to do reserves in Lebanon or my children. Well, I'm not going to let my children die for an idea, you know? And
right.
I think that, and in terms of where I come from, you know, I'm torn about that. I'm not torn about that. I mean, I believe there's definitely a need for the state of Israel. It's not an easy, you know, it's not something
yeah.
easy to sustain. And doesn't justify certain actions or not justify others, but I think it's necessary.
Yeah.
So
we're going to talk to some of the characters
yes.
after the break, but I would like to know, have you received any flack, any criticism? Because certainly people who are attracted to some of the ideas are going to have their own. Has anyone cornered you after the show?
No, I think that the views I portray are so diverse that there's almost something in it for everyone in a way. I think people
mm-hmm.
are surprised. I mean, I have a Palestinian intellectual and who talks about how she's trying to steer her son away from extremism, and she's actually one of the only characters that has kind of a very developed humanitarian approach to both sides, and that's the character I chose to explore that perspective actually. And then I have a West Bank settler who spouts out her facts and says, you know, we need to be here historically, biblically. But then I have other people that are like, what are we doing? You know, so I think it covers the gamut. I also have a guy who's building a rapture center, which I thought you could relate to.
Who I think we're going to talk
yes.
to after the break. Our guest is Aris Barr. She is the writer. I don't know if you directed it, but she's the writer and performer of Die, which is at the Culture Project in New York City, Tuesday through Saturday at 8 p.m. You can go to cultureproject.org for information and go see the show. And when we come back in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to a few of the characters and Aris, I imagine. I don't know how lost she gets, but hang out for that. We'll be right back. It's Marin in for Cedar, 42 past the hour.
It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
All right, 46 past the hour, Marin in for Cedar with Jim Earle. Going to land this thing. Our guest in studio in New York, Aris Barr, her one-person show, DAI, D-A-I, which stands for Enough in Hebrew, is at the Culture Project, Tuesday through Saturday at 8 p.m. You can go to cultureproject.org for information. It is a multi-personality, multi-character show done by Aris, who is there in the studio. But we're going to not talk to Aris now. We're now going to talk to some of the characters that are in the show, which takes place at a Tel Aviv cafe shortly before a suicide bomber enters and detonates. We're now going to have a chat with someone some of you may know from my old show. She's a Russian prostitute, Svetlana, obviously not a native to Israel. How does the Palestinian-Israeli conflict affect you, Svetlana?
Well, I don't give crap, Mark. I'll be
yeah.
honest with you. No, I'm only
yeah.
there to make money, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I have no allegiance to either side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You pay a
so
guy.
So why are you in here?
Well,
why
it's
you
Easter's
in
Europe. You know, the Israelis are so happy. Jews want to live in this crazy country. It doesn't matter what you want to do, you know.
Uh-huh.
You want to be a Jewish crack dealer, please come. The Arabs are outnumbering us. Come sell crack in the Holy Land, you know. It's very easy, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
It's my husband, Maxim. It was his idea to go.
Yeah, and I see your employer as well.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he loves that my vagina is a highway. I have to be honest with you, Mark. You know, but what can I say? You know, it's and you know, it's good. It's exotic for Israeli men. You know, they feel less guilty when their whore is not Jewish. You know, it's easier for them. It's exotic. Right. You know, see, you know, Mark, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Let's not go too deeply.
Sorry,
into
of course not. I understand. It's a different show. Different show.
Yeah. So I'd like to address my next question to Uzi. He is the kibbutznik. Thanks for joining us there in New York
City.
Thank
you.
Where are you from?
I'm from Kibbutz Le'avot HaBashan. Do you know?
No, I don't know. Where are you from originally?
Well, originally, we are from the kibbutz. It's in the Golan. And
so
it's at the end of the world. You know, it's so funny, Mark. A few weeks ago, a producer is calling me from Los Angeles. You are in Los Angeles, yes?
Yes,
he
I
was calling
here, yeah.
to consult with me because they are making a movie about the Middle East conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you Americans are so funny. You have one war in Vietnam. You are making 500 movies about it. You know?
Yeah.
We have it's calling to concern because they are portraying Arik's unit, Arik Sharon.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we were in the same unit in 56, 67, 73.
Yeah.
He was a good man.
Yeah.
And he's so excited. You know, he's saying, soldiers getting kidnapped, the war in Lebanon. I can't believe you haven't made a movie about it yet.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
So are you going to help him?
I'm going to help him. You know, I remember him in the kibbutz as a young boy. He used to come in his American groups, you know, these kibbutz groups. We used to call him Panas, flashlight, because he was so white, we could see him coming out of the chicken coop in the middle of the night from a kilometer away.
Okay, so let's move on to Alma, who has left Israel. So why did you leave Israel?
Well, Mark, I live in Long Island. I am married to Moti of Moti's Limousines, largest in Tri-State area. I'm sure
I've been in one of his cars, actually.
Have you really? Yes.
It's
very civilized in Long Island. You know, we live in a very sophisticated neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I refuse to live in Israel anymore. I'm not going to worry about every time my husband goes to do reserves, you know, or my children, or some stupid settler that thinks that it's okay to live in the middle of the Palestinian land. It's their land. Let them live, poor souls. There are many places to live. You have to live right there.
Are you going to go back to Israel ever?
I try and avoid. It's like third world over there, you know. It's loud, it's smoky, it's primitive, you know. And I almost have forgotten most of my Hebrew, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It's hard to, go ahead.
So why don't we talk to Trev Brodman? He is a Dominionist evangelical Christian. Trev, why are you so pro-Israel?
Well, you know, the Jews have to be protected from harm until the Battle of Armageddon. You know, they must rule the biblical land in order for Christ to return. I'm sure you know this.
Yeah,
and we have funneled a lot of money and political support towards Israel's security efforts in order to ensure that that happens. You know, of course, at that time, once Armageddon does come, the Jews have to either accept Jesus as their Messiah or get incinerated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a no-brainer, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
So, I think that I understand the point of you are there to facilitate Armageddon.
Yes, I mean, we're expediting, you know, we're helping these people survive in order to expedite their destruction. That's pretty much how it goes. But I got to tell you, you know, my wife, Cheryl, makes me feel stupid all the time. She keeps telling me the Israelis don't believe in the rapture. You know, they're just, and I'm thinking they're just using us for our money and political support, which I think which kind of hurts, actually, if I really think about it. And I don't think it's very smart. I mean, you know, let me tell you something. The powerful people that devoutly believe the rapture is imminent, you know, they might grow impatient when it doesn't happen as soon as they thought, and they may start reinterpreting revelations to justify the holdup, Mark.
Yeah.
Now, what happens if that new interpretation that emerges is that it is the very existence of Israel that's holding up the rapture?
Uh-huh.
You know, that the new Jerusalem can't descend until we get rid of old Jerusalem first to make way for it.
Uh-huh.
What happens then is that, you know, a different kind of Israel might have to exist. You know, a kind of Israel occupied entirely by its Arab neighbors, let's say.
Wow.
So I think it's kind of a sketchy proposition to take us for suckers. I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think that I was in the middle of you saying that, and I had no idea that Arise was even involved in the show anymore.
Really?
Can you bring her back? Can we have Arise back?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my God. I was listening to you do with that character, and I'm like, wow, I'm engaged with it, and maybe I'm just too tired, but I had no idea.
That's funny.
So now tell me about this show is on. It's on every night. How many seats in the theater, Arise?
This theater in particular, I think, has 199. And then we're moving to a new space. The Culture Project is moving. It's kind of an exciting move to a new space on Mercer.
Mm-hmm.
Culture Project Soho, I think, is what it's going to be called. And
That's 140 seats. I think they did Nine Parts of Desire there. They did Golda's Balcony there. So there's been a...
Now, what will it cost the people to come down and see you do your performance of the people and
the characters?
Well, you
know, you can always haggle me down, Mark. I can probably offer some sort of discount.
Yeah.
I think tickets are $55. You know, if they contact me through my website, I might be able to get them a discount.
Well, and what is that website, darling?
It's irisbar.org.
Okay.
I-R-I-S, so yes, because people are like, what? Elise? Shireen?
Iris.
Eunice? Yeah,
I did that to you. Iris?
Yes, I remember that.
And I was pretending like I knew your name, and I thought I was being so clever.
Right.
And you're like, it's Iris. And I'm like, oh, it's I'm an ass.
I got to tell you, Mark, I miss your show, and I miss Svetlana with you, and it's hard.
Yeah.
I'm going through a little withdrawal here.
Yeah, you and me both. I'm starting to go soft in the brain, sitting around the house too much, reading the papers all day. The one thing that I compulsively do because of being on the radio for the time I was on is I have to stay up on as much as possible, and I can't believe when things get away from me. It seems to me that no matter how much you read, no matter how much you do, how many websites you go to, you can spend 3 hours in the morning to get all up to speed, and someone will come up to you and go, did you see that footage of Danny DeVito on The View drunk? And I'm like, no, I didn't see. Not only did I not see, I didn't even hear about it.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I've been doing this show, which is physically and emotionally, you know, draining for me. I'm very attached to the material, and you know, and I have fun doing it, though. I mean, part of it's very funny. That's the good thing. I mean, people, I hate to sound cliche, but they laugh and they cry, you know, minute to minute, which is good.
That's
which
what
theater
is supposed to be.
Exactly. And I think that just being able to give people a visceral experience. And, you know, I'm not out to change anyone's opinion. You know, a woman came up to me, actually, she was Muslim, and she said, you know, you really changed my perspective, which was so gratifying to me. Because she's like, you didn't change my opinion. You know, people think what they're going to think. But if they have an opportunity to come see something and see it through the humanity of it and actually understand where people are coming from because they're, you know, they're connected to them on an emotional level, that to me is, you know.
That's where it's at. I mean, I was talking about that earlier today in terms of this country, in terms of the needs of regular people, that when people sit down and talk to each other, help each other on a basic level, just, you know, person to person, you know, so much can transpire between two people. But ideologically, if they're not sitting there next to each other, they're going to be in different worlds, and they may enter those worlds when they leave each other. But there are moments where you can transcend all that crap.
I mean, there's obviously universal issues that every, you know, love, loss, and things like that. And I try and bring that to people, and hopefully people that have no connection or even knowledge of Israel and don't even care will come see the show, you know. And,
well, it's a heavy thing. You know, I did a show, Jerusalem Syndrome, and just by virtue of the name, people are like, nah, I don't know.
You right, know, they don't want to be bothered. I have to emphasize, you know, I have a history in stand-up. I did Larry the Cable Guy, for Christ's sake, you know. You know, I went from Larry David to Larry the Cable Guy. I think people know me from Curb, and that's good, and people come see me because
you were
of that.
The Orthodox girl in
Curb.
Yes,
the ski lift episode, which was a festive one. And I got a boob job, which is, you know. Life has not been the same going back to what I have for real. But I know it's sad, but I'm learning to live with it. I'm learning to live with it.
No, if it's any, I think they're fine.
Thank you.
They're
happy, they're perky, they're festive. It's totally good. But I, you know, people come. I want them to be entertained, and that's why you should come to the theater. And if you come out of it thinking, if you come out of it, you know, moved or even shaken, which is fine too. I think people shy away from being shaken sometimes, and that's not a good thing to shy away from, I think.
No, it sounds like it's doing what theater should do. Go see Iris Bar. Thank you for coming and hanging out and talking. You bet. It's a culture project at cultureproject.org, Tuesday through Saturday at 8 p.m. Jim, this has been fun. I hope you had a good time.
I had a great time. If anybody out there has Sandy Duncan's eyeball, send it to me. I live in Echo Park. They know me.
Jim is collecting eyeballs in the memory and fond memory of Malachi Risher, who killed himself to raise awareness about the war. He was also an avid glass eye collector, and I think that
snare drums too.
Yeah, we're not mocking him. I really did want to bring attention to what that guy did. I don't think it's a good idea to speak your mind that way, but I didn't want it to go unnoticed. Please have a great weekend. Sam Cedar will be back Monday. I hope that if Sam is listening, you're having an okay move. And I hope to talk to you people on the air again soon. This has been the Sam Cedar Show. I'd like to thank everybody out there in New York and here in L.A. for helping us get this show on the air. I can't name names. I'm running out of time. So take care. Sam will be back Monday.
Sam Cedar on Air America Radio.